2 weeks in to our series of state legislative candidate forums, and this evening we talk about the 29th State Assembly race. Two men are campaigning to represent the 29th District, which includes much of St. Croix County and a small part of the southwestern corner of Dunn County. That includes the cities of Menominee and New Richmond and a number of other towns. So stay tuned and learn about the men that may represent your interests for the next 2 years in Madison. This is the Westside 29th State Assembly Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined in studio by both candidates. And first, I'll introduce Republican incumbent John Murtha. Representative Murtha is a small business owner from Baldwin who was elected to the 29th in 2006 and has been reelected since 2008. John Murtha, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you. Nice to be here, Rich.
And now I'd like to introduce Democratic challenger Jim Swanson. Mr. Swanson is a lead teacher at the Lucas Charter School in Menominee. He's an outdoor writer for the Dunn County News and has been named Outdoor Educator of the Year by the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. Jim Swanson, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. And now I'd like to remind listeners that this is not a debate. It's a forum, an open discussion, if you will, and I want you to be part of it. If you live in the 29th State Assembly District, and even if you don't, give us a call for a chance to speak directly with these two candidates. It's a chance for you to ask them direct questions and make direct comments to them. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615, and you can also leave a post on the Westside Facebook page. And first, we'll get some, I want to let the candidates give themselves a little bit of an introduction here, and I'll first start with incumbent representative John Murtha. And John, if you would, tell the voters why you're seeking another term.
All right, well, thank you, Rich. Nice to be here again today. I was elected, like you said, in 2006, and we have accomplished a lot of great things, I feel, in a state that needed to be reformed, looked at, and I don't think our job is done yet. We're on track for a bright future for Wisconsin. We made many leaps here in the progress towards jobs, and I want to continue following it through. I have a background, like you said, I'm a small business. I was the town chairman and on the board for 10 years, so I've had an interest in politics, in government working, and letting government let us work. So I'm excited and looking forward to doing better things yet.
All right. Thank you very much. And now, Jim Swanson, first of all, have you run before for statewide office? And if not, why don't you let the voters know a little bit about yourself?
Okay. Well, no, I've never run for statewide office before. As you said in the intro, I worked at the Lucas Charter for many years as the lead teacher. That school got closed 2 years ago because of the budget cuts in Act 10, so that actually no longer exists. I'm an outdoorsman and conservationist, and as you said, I got an award from the Wildlife Federation as an outdoor educator. I've always been very active in conservation issues, both hands-on stuff, you know, out in the field cutting down trees with my chainsaw to improve trout streams, to going down to Madison to lobby. And it's just in probably the last 7 or 8 years, I think conservation has got the back burner in Wisconsin. And the reason I decided to run is I think it needs to be on the front burner. And that's one of the main issues I'm running on.
All right. Thank you very much. And we'll get into the questions now, and I'll go back to you, John Murtha. And the number one issue of the 2012 election is much the same as it was 2 years ago. And I'm talking about economy and particularly jobs. Now, right after taking office, Governor Walker called a special legislative session to address the jobs issue. What bills specifically passed last session do you feel are most likely to help create jobs?
Well, we've done a lot of things on the front there is to help pre-enterprise, the entrepreneurs get out there and with streamlining some permitting processes was one of the initiatives that we took. I think it will help promote things. We had a Rural Jobs Act that was put through. This is going to help the rural, smaller communities. Always seems like grant money and things are kind of concentrated on major cities and bigger parts of the state, but this brings it back home in our own area here, where there'd be money, tax credits available to promote and get businesses on their feet and get them going. Government doesn't create a job, but it can create an environment for jobs to succeed, to work, without, you know, being squashed. And at this right now, as fragile as it is with the economy, it's important we do this to get the people here for our jobs. The relocation tax credit was another one. Out-of-state businesses that would like to operate in Wisconsin, we made it inviting for them to come here too and to hire people. And all of these things that we have done, you know, it isn't a giveaway. It's not it's money that they have to earn. It's a tax credit that these businesses that do come to our state and that start up, they have to have a tax liability. In other words, they have to be profitable to start getting on their feet, and they will repay the state back. So we're helping them get on their feet, get them going, get some jobs to turn the economy around here. Our state's hurting, like we all know. And it's simple math. You have to increase the income or cut the spending. So that's what we're doing both. And the jobs part of it is increase the income.
All right. And Jim Swanson, if elected to the 29th, what would your approach be to help grow jobs? And do you agree that the what was passed in the special session or the overall 2011-2012 sessions is helping?
Well, I think we've not experienced very fast job growth in the last year. We've been, you know, one of the worst performers in creating jobs, so I don't think it's been working very well. We've also been one of the top states in losing income. I think we were number 8 for income decline in the nation. So there's a lot of things we can do. And tax breaks are one way to go. Grants, other things like that are another way to go. They possibly are more effective because there's been a lot of studies out there that really look at some of the tax breaks and whether they're effective or not. And one of the things you have to remember when you're doing a tax break, it's kind of like spending money because it's not coming in. And so whenever you give a tax break or whether we're doing a grant or something, we really need to look at it and say, is this effective? Are we spending our money wisely by giving that tax break or not? Another thing that I think we need to do is one of the first things that got passed or undone was we had what's called the Las Vegas loophole, which actually gave a tax break for businesses to go out of state. And that was repealed a few years ago, and then that got reinstated. I think I would definitely want to get rid of that. I don't think taxpayers should be subsidizing businesses leaving the state.
All right. John Murth, are you familiar with what candidate Swanson is talking about, the Las Vegas loophole? Bigger than that, kind of more encompassing is the question of whether tax breaks are, whether it trickles down to the average Joe on the street.
Yeah, I am, to answer both questions, I'll try to make it brief too. I am familiar with what he's talking about, and that's a debatable, controversial subject. I mean, that on the surface, it looks like, yes, they're getting away with something. The other side, if their company's not doing business in Wisconsin, but they have one small shop here, that's what they're asking them to pay, the same percentage of their entire income off of one slice of that may be made in Wisconsin. So we addressed that, looked at that, and I'm sure it'll be looked at again. But as far as trickle-down goes, absolutely. I mean, I can see it firsthand in our own communities in Woodville. Take, for example, just the manufacturing part of the state right now is starting to come alive. We got some good companies out there that are hiring people because of, you know, things are moving, and they have some breaks along the way here that they're enabled to take advantage of and expand their business, hire more people. By them doing so, there's other people that get hired in the community. It keeps going down the line with the garbage man, which I'm involved with as well, as the trucking companies that haul stuff in and out of there. We have restaurants and motels and on down line because people have a job. And I firmly believe we're on the right track. Get things motivated and going.
But what about I'll follow that up with the claim about jobs still being pretty anemic in Wisconsin. Wisconsin, you know, the federal government did confirm that there were about 30,000 or so jobs added during the past year or so, but still behind other states. So are the reforms and are the tax breaks not working, or do they just need more time to kind of take effect?
Well, I think they are working. It will take a little time to see a bigger result than we are seeing. But on the surface right now, I think we are truly moving in the right direction. I think there's some hesitancy in people who are just a little bit leery, waiting to see what the fall election will bring. There's some changes that could be made, drastic changes in the expense of expanding a company under different leadership. So I think that, and with the recall elections and stuff that we had through the summer, everyone is just kind of sitting. I think they're waiting for the dust to settle here a little bit and see where we're going. But I sure feel good that Wisconsin is leading the pack right now. I mean, we've set a pattern out there, that a path to follow, that we want you to succeed. We want government to get out of the way. We want to streamline our permitting process and get you going and get you on your feet. And that all comes back into the state coffers. And everyone has a job. The state, we can pay our bills, and it all falls in place.
And Jim Swanson, the Wisconsin unemployment rate is at 7.3%. That's below the national rate for unemployment, but still higher than we'd like to see. We were talking about tax breaks and trickle down. Do you think it works? And do you think that, I guess another question or another way to put it is, do politicians really have any influence on whether an economy grows or not? Or is it just, you know, when the economy grows or not?
No, I think politicians do have an influence in laws, and obviously it's one of the reasons why we have government and legislatures, because we do influence how the economy is going to go. You know, we need to have smart laws. We need to do things in a smart way, so when we do spend money, we're doing it effectively, we're doing it efficiently, and we also want to make sure that how we do it is transparent. You know, one of the big things that we've heard a lot, I think if you pay attention to the national, is that there's a lot of jobs out there, but people don't have training for them. You know, and one of the places where that training occurs is at our technical colleges, but they've experienced some really severe budget cuts in the last year. You know, that's one of the things that I think we need to change. We need to make those schools available to everyone that wants to get retrained, has a lot of job, and needs to go back and learn a new skill.
Well, we'll talk about education and education funding in just a bit. I want to remind listeners that you're listening to the West Side 29th State Assembly District Candidate Forum with incumbent Republican John Murtha and Democratic challenger Jim Swanson. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, ask a direct question to either of the candidates, do give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number, again, is 1-800-228-5615. We go to the phones now, and we've got Vincent calling from Menominee. And, Vincent, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Rich, and good evening to you all. My question is for candidate Swanson. Mr. Swanson, could you tell us a little bit about why you have decided to run against John Murtha? And secondly, for both of the candidates, how do constituents in the 29th know that you as individuals aren't just beholden to your parties as far as voting records will go? You know, how do we know that you are going to have the people's best interests at heart? And I can take my answer off there. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Good questions there, Vincent and Jim Swanson.
Well, thanks for the question. Actually, I have to thank John for kind of inspiring me to run. A couple years ago, I was down in Madison, and the big issue back then was who was going to appoint the DNR secretary, either the DNR board or the governor. And I went down and talked to John the first time the bill came up, and we had a really nice chat, and he actually voted for the bill, and I was really happy. Then, unfortunately, Governor Doyle vetoed the bill, and then there was a veto override. And I went back down to Madison the second time and to once again lobby. And instead of talking to me, John shuffled me off to his aide and then flip-flopped his vote and voted against it. And so I wasn't real happy as a constituent, as an outdoorsman, that we've been working on that for 15 years. And so actually that incident is kind of one of the reasons why I'm running. As far as the second part of the question, how are we not beholden to special interests?
How do you prove?
How do I prove? Yeah. Basically, it's very simple. I am running what's called a tin cup campaign. And tin cup campaign is something I actually read somebody else had written about. But we are taking absolutely no money from PACs of any kind. Mm-hmm. You know, being a Democrat, I should be lining up all the labor unions and all those folks to give me money. I'm not. I'm only taking money from individuals, and I don't have the exact numbers, but I'm guessing at least 90% of our donations are coming from in-district. I know my sister and my cousin gave me some money from out of state, and that's about it. But, you know, I want to be independent when I get to Madison. My main job is going to be representing the people of the 29th District, you know, and I think, and John probably will agree with this, a lot of people I've talked to, that a lot of times Western Wisconsin kind of is a foreign country to the folks down in Madison. And, you know, when I get down there, I'm going to represent the district, and I'm going to try and change that.
All right. And John Murtha, now, do you have any examples where you specifically, or specific examples where you bucked the Republican Party, or where you didn't toe the line, as some people would say?
We could do that at any time you want to. I get that question asked before. I would like to kind of back up for Vincent's question, if I could,
sure,
on that, just to touch on it. But and I'll try to answer that question as well for you. About being holding to the party, I think is what he asked.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of asking the same thing here. When I was elected, I came in here pretty naive, not really knowing what's going on here. And I think I'm a citizen legislator. I have a little background in town business, which is small compared to what we're dealing with now. But my interests are as a businessman, as a family person, raising the kids in a public school system to monitor this, watch, see how this process goes, and be in there and make some fair, good choices that represent and take care of the taxpayer. And every bill that comes up in front of me, I don't care if it's Democrat or Republican bill, I look through it and talk to it. I've talked to college students. I've talked to business people. I've talked to and then I'll go back and say, well, who's against this? Who doesn't like it? Who's your enemy here? And weigh it out. Then I'll look at it and say, is this going to be good for the taxpayer or not? And that's how I make my decisions. It's not on a party level. It's not the money contributions. It's just how we get forward, how we move forward and protect the taxpayer. And that's what I'd like to say on that. As far as my opponent here, Mr. Swanson, brought up the DNR secretary bill. This was two sessions ago. This wasn't even lately.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to just respond to that so people understand and know what's going on a little bit without dwelling on it. But there's an issue that was brought up that either the board would appoint a secretary or retain it as it's been as the governor appointing a secretary. In the battle out there, the arguments were both good on both sides. I understood. I could see both sides of the story. And I thought if the board, by appointing a secretary, would take the politics out of the DNR, I was okay with that. I did go along and voted for that. When Governor Doyle, a Democrat, vetoed it, I voted bipartisan and stuck with the governor's veto for the reason that he thought, as well as it was brought to all of our attention, you needed an elected official to be accountable in that position. Somebody that you can call up, somebody you can go to, and somebody you can talk to and say, hey, this is wrong, that's wrong. Otherwise, there's no accountability. The governor comes back down, and if he's got a secretary in there that is not representing his values, what he wants done in the state, he's got some authority over him to remove him. The other way around, there's nothing there. It's the fox guard and the hen house. And that is where I did not flip-flop my vote. This is where I took the position of the governor on this thing, and we'll stand by it.
All right, very good. Let's go back to the phones now, and this time we will go to Elk Mound, and we've got Doran on the line. And Doran, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's your question or comment for the candidates?
Thanks. I guess, as I say, a couple years ago, we started a third small business. I own two and started a third. And if I would have known what it was going to take to deal with the state government and federal, for that matter, to start that third business, I don't know if I'd have it in me to start it again. And it seems like if you ever get any month or quarter where you actually are making a little money, they're there to take it. And so I guess to see that streamlined would be nice. But on the other hand, when I hear Murtha talk about streamlining and permitting, I'd like to hear some comments about the sand mining industry around Menominee and to the northeast of Menominee. And then also about the Red Cedar River and that whole deal from Menominee, a lake in Menominee that you can't put your foot in. And if you don't rinse off quick, your foot's going to be burned, you know, and you got a conservationist on the ticket. What what's his agenda for that situation. And those are my comments.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Doran, for that. And I'll put the I'll go to the businessman here, John Murth, to speak about regulations, and that's obviously something that restrictions and regulations on business through the DNR or whatever agency, that's something that your party and the legislature last session has done a lot of work on, isn't it?
That's correct. Yes. The stand mining he's speaking of right now is something that the state has not got a hand on right at this point.
Should the state regulate it?
Well, that's a good question. We're hopeful that the local communities will set their own agenda. And I went to a seminar on this all day and explained it. I would encourage any local municipality to get on board at this point right now and sit and discuss with this and set up rules and ways of making it work for everyone. Without the state having to come in with a heavy hand, because every individual municipality is different. And I believe in local control, and we would like to see local control dominate this conversation and take charge of it and set it up so it's workable for them. One size doesn't fit all, and it's just it's hard to stand back in Madison and tell them what they should do here in Menominee. But hopefully we can find some happy ground, some compromise on these issues that are, I know, troubling to a lot of people. As far as the water situation, I don't know if you're talking about the river.
I imagine he's talking about nutrients, excessive nutrient runoff, and the algae problem.
Right. We've done a lot of work on that and stuff, and it's in progress. We're making headway in that direction. There's been some money that's coming to the DNRs on top of this. I spoke with Dick Lammers, he's head of the commission out here out of Menominee just lately. He's excited and encouraged that things are going to come around, that we're in the right path. Streamlining permitting, like you asked about, Darwin, is something that we feel like the mining bill up north in northern Wisconsin is one of the things that was a good example of streamlining it. Is putting a predictable time period on when the DNR can give an answer back or something in that order. So you're not hung out there for years and years waiting on something. We want a predictable time frame to be workable so a company can come in here and know if they can or can't do this type of project. And it's not a compromise on environmental standards by any means. The DNR, the EPA, the Wild Fish and Game, everyone is still involved in all of these projects. It's just a matter of making it happen now rather than 15 years from now.
All right, Jim Swanson, I want to ask you first about the bigger issue of environment versus economic development and how does that balance get struck? And you as a conservationist, someone would assume that you would want more regulations on farms, point source, or frac sand mines.
Well, you need both, obviously. We need to do economic development in a way that's not going to harm our children's future. It also has to do it in a way that's not going to take away jobs. You know, because when you bring in, like John threw the example of the iron mine up north and the streamlining that was going on up there, you know, it would have been jobs for the iron mine, but then what about all the tourist industry that is up there? How would have that been harmed? Because the permitting process that would have happened under the streamlining bill would have degraded the environment up there, and a lot of people that were involved with the tourist industry were worried about their industry be going downhill, and was there actually going to be a net gain to jobs or not?
Well, here with sand mining, there was a report from the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism that they came up with an average number that was actually confirmed by the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Right. 2,000 some jobs that could be created through this new industry, but
correct.
Again, how do you regulate that?
Right. Well, with the sand mining, there's a lot of issues, and I've heard, as I've been out campaigning, I've heard an awful lot about sand mining from people in Dunn County, especially, and also some people in St. Croix County. The issues that they're worried about are water, especially groundwater. They're also worried about the silica dust. And then the effects on roads and just basically good neighbor stuff. You know, how loud is the mine going to be? You know, a lot of people move to the country because they want to live in the country where it's quiet and peaceful. And basically they're left alone, and all of a sudden they have a sand mine next to them. And, you know, they've been living there for 20 years, and all of a sudden their property value goes to heck. And they're stuck. You know, they're ready to retire, and they've just lost everything basically because of this. So, you know, you need some level of regulation so that the people who have been living there and been good citizens and been taking care of their land and paying their taxes and all of those things aren't penalized because a new industry moves in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we also, as far as water, I mean, you know, right now we're in the middle of this huge drought. You know, the Red Cedar River and the algae blooms are worse than ever, in part because of the drought. You know, and all of a sudden we have an industry that's going to be taking out an awful lot of groundwater. And we already have an agricultural industry that's really dependent on a lot of water because of irrigation and stuff. So, you know, you have to have regulation to balance out all the interests. You just can't say, oh, we'll let the market regulate it, because then we're going to end up highest bidder taking the water, and that's the sand mines. Then all of a sudden what happens to the farming community? What happens to the individual who has a well in their backyard that's a very shallow well and it gets sucked dry?
There were, I know Kathleen Vinehout, a senator from Alma, had drafted some legislation to try to get some kind of a state some bit of state regulation on sand mining. Should it be the state or should it be the locals? Even if when in such situations, the locals, if they're not zoned, they don't have a whole lot of say.
Well, if they have absolutely no say, if it's not zoned.
Mm-hmm.
So zoning is important, but some of these issues, you know, like, you know, Dunn County, we've got all these different townships that are dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in our county, we have one aquifer that provides groundwater for the entire county. If each individual township has its own regulations, some other township's going to end up getting the short end of the stick eventually. So you have to look at a big picture. I mean, there's sometimes local control and is a great thing, and I'm all for it, but there's also times when you have to deal with it on a bigger issue, on a bigger level, I mean.
And John Murth, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think we all agree that this is, you know, some serious stuff, and it's sensitive issues that we're dealing with right now, something we haven't had to look at for a while. It's encouraging to see that there's so many jobs and stuff are coming out of this, but we have to have a balance. And it was mentioned here, the zoning is a big part of it. So if your county's zoned, however it is, that's where it's at right now. And the state just can't come in and wave a wand and do something. I understand the need that to have some kind of a regulation of some kind, and it'll probably come down to that. But we're encouraging, you know, each municipality to look into this individually and take all the things into effect that's just been spoken here. I think there are property rights out there, and I understand and see both sides that, okay, if your neighbor just got a big chunk of money to do something, and he's owned that land all of his life, and this may be his retirement fund, and this is his opportunity to cash out, who are you to say you can't do that? The other guy doesn't get anything. I mean, it's a sensitive issue, and it needs to be looked at, and I'm open to both sides. But at this point, like I said earlier, we're hoping the locals can make it work for their own community without the state coming in and regulating it all.
One other point I'd like to make is my wife lived in Alaska for a couple of years. And up there, they have an extraction tax on oil, and everybody in the state gets a check once a year based on that. I think that's something we need to look at here in Wisconsin, too, is some kind of an extraction fee for the sand. Every other state that pretty much mines sand has an extraction fee on it. You know, if nothing else, we need to set it up so that the money goes back to the municipalities, the towns and stuff, so that if the roads are being torn up and you're incurring extra costs because of the sand mining out on there, they have money to fix that, and it's not coming out of the taxpayer's dime.
John Murphy, you'd like to respond?
Yeah, I would. You know, what you just touched on exactly what we're talking about, local control. I think we're in agreement on that issue right there. And this is something that the town board or the municipality can set up. They can say, we need so much a ton of every ton that comes out of that pit, and that's going to go back to our road repair. We're going to limit the hours of operation. It could be on a daily basis, or it could be seasonal, okay? You're not going to run between February and March or something, or wherever. You can set up your own regulations and set up your own fees and put this in place so that the county or the municipality, the roads are paid for, and that's the stuff that we're hoping can be, you know, find a compromise on a local level, that in each municipality may be different. That's where I'm coming from. encouraging that they can do this, and they have the right and authority to do that. You know, and that's what our hope is there before the state comes in and has to have one size fit all.
Yeah, and that's a lot of communities are doing just that as far as with road impact fees. What is your thought, or what do you think about a mineral extraction fee that would go back to municipalities or go back to individuals somehow, John Murtha?
I think the mining companies are open to that. I really do. I think they expect to pay some type of thing. There is an inconvenience for some people along the way here, and I think the product and the demand for this product, that, you know, it's kind of unique to be this part of the country. We're fortunate enough to be able to capitalize on it, but we've got to do it fair and equitable, I think. And I think they are willing to work with the people as well in that. So I wouldn't be opposed to that idea.
All right. Well, you're listening to the 29th State Assembly Candidate Forum with Republican incumbent John Murtha and Democratic challenger Jim Swanson. We've got one caller on the line, and Vicki in Augusta, do stand by. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Any other callers that would like to ask direct questions to either of the candidates that are looking to represent you in the 29th, give us a call. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. The West Side will return after this break.
Support for WPR comes from H.J. Pertzborn Plumbing and Fire Protection, your family plumber dedicated to providing quality service, proudly serving Dane County and surrounding areas since 1928. More information at hjpertzborn.com.
Peter Yarrow's coming to the Heide Center in 3 weeks, so we thought you might want to hear how and what he's doing. We'll spend time getting to know him better. Looks like 18-year-old Joel Luganville will be embarking on a career in television. The size of that career remains to be seen, but he's got a great start with Joe's Kitchen on YouTube. We'll talk about his exciting times. And Jim Oliver welcomes Sarah Raff, author of a series of novels set in Wisconsin. She's coming to Eau Claire to read to us. Don't miss Spectrum West tomorrow at 5 p.m. on this station of the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from the Chippewa Valley Museum, celebrating Norwegian heritage at Ufta Palooza. Food, music, wines, and a silent auction Thursday the 27th at the Florian Gardens. RSVP at 834-7871.
I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side 29th State Assembly Candidate Forum on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. I'm joined in studio by incumbent Republican John Murtha of Baldwin and his Democratic challenger Jim Swanson of Menominee. And I'd like to remind you, the listener, that you deserve to be part of this program too and this conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-228-5615 to ask a direct question to the men that are looking to represent you in the 29th. And again, the 29th, a big chunk of St. Croix County, a little bit of Dunn County, and also the cities, basically New Richmond and Menominee are the two major cities in that district. Give us a call, 800-228-5615. Back to the phones now, and Vicki has been waiting patiently on the line. Thanks a lot, Vicki. You're on the air. What's your comment or question for the candidates?
Yes. Well, my comment goes to John Murtha. He was talking about a local company getting help and hiring more people and those people putting money back into the economy and creating jobs because of the jobs that were created from the first company getting help. And then he mentioned trickle-down in the sentence right after it, as if that was what trickle-down is. And the historical definition of trickle-down is when we give a millionaire, one of the 1%, or a huge corporation tax breaks, and somehow that money is supposed to trickle down into our local economy, and it's never worked. Right now, you give tax breaks to the 1%, and they're putting their money out in the Cayman Islands, whereas with the economy stimulus that happened through Obama and what would have happened had the Republicans not blocked the Jobs Act, there would have been much more money going into the local economy, and every $1, and I'd like our Democratic person to talk about this, every $1 that's spent locally gets made bigger by 7 times, according to the local information that I've been hearing. That's my comment and question.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Vicki. And John Murtha, would you like to respond to the whole idea of the trickle down, her accusations about that?
All right, sure, I'd like to. Thank you, Vicki, for the question. And I think a lot of people ask that same type of question, and I don't think it's fully understood. Hopefully I can explain my view of that to you. Is if the government reduces its tax on a product that your manufacturing company could use, or reduces the tax on, a building expansion, some way of expanding or using your building and hiring more people. That's the whole premise behind it. So if there's a tax break, that they don't charge you as much tax as they would have, and it's your money in the first place, this allows you to purchase another machine. And that machine, you'd have to probably hire an operator. The company grows because of that machine and probably hire or put a salesman on out there because of the added product. Pretty soon you need to expand your business, again, make a bigger building to accommodate the growth that was allowed by this tax break. Yeah, you bring in carpenters, you bring in electricians, you bring in excavators, you bring in truck drivers, and somebody had to make that machine in the first place. It trickles down. It actually does. And this is what will build the company up and put more people to work. And that's kind of the basics of it. I know there's so many misconceptions and ideas that the rich get a tax break, but it isn't that way at all.
Jim Swanson, and would you like to comment? She mentioned a figure about spending money locally.
Sure. Before I do, though, just with the trickle-down, I mean, the economists have, in history, has shown it doesn't work on the national level. You know, we did trickle-down with Bush. We got the Great Recession. We did trickle-down with Reagan. We got a bunch of recessions. You know, I have a lot of friends that are small businessmen, and they all say the best thing you can do for their business is to make sure their customers have money in their pockets. And you're not going to do that by giving tax breaks to millionaires. And so we need to find ways to get money in the hands of the average middle-income people, you know. And as far as spending money locally, she is right about the multiplier effect, you know, and I've had my economics classes way back when, and they talk about that. Myself, personally, both me and my wife, you know, we believe strongly in buying locally and buying from local people. You know, when we go out for our Friday night fish rides, we go to a local restaurant. We don't go to the chain. You know, when we have to go shopping, we go downtown. We don't go to the mall. You know, so we're always putting our money into the local economy as much as possible, and we encourage other people to do that also.
I'd like to talk now about alternative energy, and I bring that up because there is a controversial wind project that is it's in the process of getting approval from the Public Service Commission in the town of Forest, and right next door is the town of Cylon, which is part of the 29th State Assembly District. And I'll go back to you, John Murtha, and then I'll get a response from Jim Swanson as well. You, John Murtha, have worked, or you mentioned on your website that you worked with Senator Lossie. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that name right, but worked on getting municipalities' local control over wind farm setbacks. That is the distance between the actual tower, turbine, and a home. And how would that work? And should Cylon be allowed to completely block the wind project if they so choose?
Well, this is, again, another hot-button issue that everyone has an opinion on. Renewable energy, the wind turbines that are proposed for the town of Forest, there's approximately 40 of them that they're talking about going in there.
Mm-hmm.
They are 500 feet tall. Just to give you somewhat of a comparison, the Empire State Building, I believe, is 1,250 feet. So these things are skyscrapers that are going to be put out in the middle of a rural ag area, with a setback of 1,250 feet from a property line. The people that live there, reside up there, just as my opponent Swanson said, they have a concern over their living, rural living. That's where they moved there, and that's the reason they're there. I sympathize with them with if there's no zoning to control this, but a 500-foot tower, 1,200 feet from your property line, this could infringe on a lot of things with you. There's some real concern. I co-sponsored a bill with Senator Lossie. Yep, you got it right. we wanted to put the power back to the local authority, the town of Forest, wherever other municipality would have the authority at this point as well, to make it work for their community rather than the state legislating again from that distance away, not knowing all the intricacies of it. But
That's basically where that's at. No one's opposed to renewable energy, but it's the location of it, you know, mm-hmm. and the size of these towers and the volume of them. That's a real concern.
The way that this wind project had begun is it had less than 40. I think if it's less than 100 megawatts or so, the permits and everything come from the local municipality. But if it's over that, the Public Service Commission, which is the state, gets involved. And because of this was so controversial that the entire town board of Forest was recalled, and that all the contracts were broken or were basically reneged on, and there was lawsuits and it was a real mess. But now the company that was going to develop this wind farm, they just added some more turbines so that it went to the state control. Should the PSC not? I mean, should it not be the PSC's control? Should it not be their decision at all to site or permit one of these wind farms?
There again, it has to come back to the local to have a say on it. I think they have a obligation to oversee this, look at that in a responsible manner. I don't think at this point right now they're considering all the factors that go in with this. And that's the problem that people are troubled with, that there's some absolute documented things going on with the low hum rumble of a turbine, of the flicker that has it. There's the animals outside, the outdoorsmen and stuff, where they're seeing a reduction in numbers in turkey and deer and other things. So there's just a lot of things that we don't know yet about a turbine, and especially that size and that many of them. And we're supporting them. And that's another thing that's kind of, I think, bothers a lot of people, that if they held their own, paid their own way, it's being supported by the taxpayer. So they have a right to weigh in and have a say.
All right. Jim Swanson, what's your thoughts on wind developments and alternative energy? Is that the way to go for our state? And also, what about the locals that don't want it in their backyard?
Well, we do have to have alternative energy. I mean, that's just a given with what we're facing in terms of climate change and all the other stuff. Once again, though, and John's right, I mean, these towers are massive. You know, I've had some conversations with the people up there, too. I understand, totally understand their concerns. You know, part of what we're looking at here is, once again, it's tax breaks to a corporation that's distorting what should be done on a market, on a level. You know, you're talking about marketplace and free market while you're giving tax breaks to put in these wind turbines. You know, would that be done without it? The other question we have to ask ourselves, do we really want huge wind projects like this, or do we want to set up our wind energy and alternative energy so homeowners and individuals can do this on their own? You know, would we want, I mean, I would love to be able to have my house completely energy independent. I wouldn't have to write out a check to NSP. Don't tell them I said that, but, you know. So, sometimes we need to stop and think, you know, are we doing this for people, or are we doing this for you know, somebody else? And more, the more we can focus things on individual and homeowners and lower their costs, I think the better off we are.
Are you saying you'd like to see maybe some tax breaks for a homeowner that wants to put a smaller wind turbine on there, or a windmill, or whatever you want to call it?
Tax breaks, yeah, that'd be one way to go. You know, another possible thing would be like a low or no interest loan. You know, so people that, you know, you got to have some skin in the game there to make it worthwhile. So there's a lot of different ways to go about it.
All right, and we're going to go back to the phones right now, and we're going to touch on the sand issue again with Jim and Barron. And Jim, you are on the air. Thanks for waiting patiently. What's your question about sand?
Hey, you're welcome. Not so much a question, but an observation.
All
and
right.
It's to the people of that 29th district that I am not a part of. But as one who served on the Barron County Board for 10 years, I can tell you that both of these candidates, particularly, I think, the comments made by Mr. Murtha, show a total lack of awareness of what's going on. He said he's been to an all-day seminar, and I would suggest that if he paid attention at any seminar, you would begin to learn that the county has certain authority, and the township, those good people who serve as township people, they're overwhelmed by this issue, as the state is in terms of staff. When it comes to water, any high gallonage well, that is over 70 gallons, is already monitored by the DNR. That's a state issue. Townships can't control that. Counties can't control that. When it comes to things like roads and hours of operation and the maintenance or the rebuilding of roads, noise, blasting, reclamation, those are all local issues. But when you say leave it to the townships, leave it to the counties, many of these issues cannot be left to the counties. They have no authority in terms of water, in terms of air. How many monitors might be put up would be something that could be negotiated with a mine company. But when it comes to the actual authority, that is not a township or a county issue. And I would encourage both of them. This is such an important issue. You need to get on top of it, gentlemen. The extraction fee, God bless you for suggesting that we go in that direction. Mirtha suggests the mining companies would be in favor of that. That was not an answer to the question. What would you do as a Republican in terms of setting forth such an extraction fee in Wisconsin? We've never had one in the history of the state. Many, many other states do. And I wish both of you well in terms of trying to get that extraction fee into the Wisconsin statutes.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot. And Barron County definitely has their fair share of sand mines at this point. And
29,
the second largest processing and rail loading facility is under construction right now in the town of Poskin, I believe. And that's the second largest in the nation, the way I understand it. But thanks for the call. And more specifics, you know, you're open to the idea. Both of you seem to be open to the idea of an extraction fee. But start with you, John Mirtha. How do you get it? You just write a bill, or how do you rally support in a pro business environment like the Republican legislature?
Well, I think first off, Jim, thank you for calling in here and appreciate your input on this. This is a complicated issue, and I'll take your suggestions well and look into this. As I am going to be touring frac sands mines in the month of October here around the area. There's two issues here. One, the mining, we're talking about ore mining up northern Wisconsin and then the sand mining around here. So The ore mining, I think there is a fee already put in there. There's something built in comparable to Minnesota. It's been negotiated and changed so many times. There's been 18 or 21 different changes to that bill, so I'm not sure where that sits. But I think, you know, I'm open to this. I'm in favor of it. I think that would be, right thing to do, I guess, is to compromise, to pay for the infrastructure and things that the state is going to have to, endure. So I'm open to that. I hope that answers your question. As far as sand mining stuff here, yes, the air quality and all that stuff, but still it has to be monitored and watched by the state. And I don't deny that or walk away from that. But the setup of operation and different things that the locals can control and put it in the favor that they want it to be is where my preference would be. You know, that I understand as being a past town chair and not on the board that there are issues that may be bigger than you can handle, and you encourage the state. But we don't want to depend on the state or the feds for everything to come in and just run our lives without us at least trying it first and see if we can't talk to our neighbors or business people, work it out ourselves. It works best for our community. That's my preference is there.
All right, Jim Swanson, how do you go about encouraging a company that just, wants to make the most profit as possible into agreeing to pay a fee at the local level or through the state through legislation?
Well, basically, you make it your priority. So when I get down to Madison, that's going to be one of my priorities is an extraction fee, definitely. And yeah, the caller is right. Local municipalities are totally overwhelmed by this. They don't have the resources to do the science to find out what some of the issues are. It's such a big thing. It's beyond them. The state really does need to get involved. I think the municipalities have tried. It hasn't worked. The state needs to get involved. That's something I will definitely work for down there. Whether it's how the state does it, whether it's a permitting process for the mines, whether it's an extraction fee, there some way the state is going to have to be involved because this is affecting everyone.
And we're getting close to the top of the hour. Reminder that people can call in at 800-228-5615. we can try to get you on the air, but it's going to be very close. Right now, I want to ask about education funding. John Murtha, I'll just kind of try to sum it up. There were some historic cuts, large cuts to K-12 education and also the tech college system and the UW system. Does that hurt job creation? Are you worried that that would create a generation of people that aren't as trained to enter the workforce? Or do you think that they were justified, or necessary, I should say?
There were cuts made across the board to every agency, not just education.
True.
Jim Doyle was the first governor ever to cut education in the state of Wisconsin. There's always been an increase.
Funding for education has been going down for decades.
Yep, and as we have, the money isn't there on the top for the state. And it had something that had changed over about 50 cents on a dollar that everything came into the state went right back out to education. Education is still the number one biggest expense that we put our money out. It's probably in the 45-cent range or 43 someplace in our, out of dollar. But it still is our priority. And I stand behind education. We need that. There was cuts made in it because, like, everyone had to take a cut. But then that in Act 10 was with Walker's movement, that the tools that he called, that he said, we'll give you the tools to work with, that's where the collective bargaining and everything else came in, so the school districts could make up that difference. We're not trying to hurt education by any means. We absolutely need education. We're trying to make it better, more accountable. We're alternatives. We're looking into everything that we can, and the state has always put education as a top priority.
All right, Jim Swanson, you're a former educator. What are your thoughts on the cuts, and would you work to reinstate some of that money?
Yeah, we definitely need to increase funding for education. The cuts that happened were a disaster. UW is stout. They're losing professors left and right because they're going places where they can get more pay. Local schools are cutting all kinds of programs. I mean, Menominee School District just dropped its requirement for arts education because they can't afford to, have high school students take art classes. You know, it's been a disaster around the state, and if you want to have a sound economy, especially in this day and this age, you have to have a very strong education system. You know, the United States and China right now are vying for who's going to have the most powerful economy in the world. The Chinese understand they're going to do that through education, and they're spending a huge amount of money on it. And if we don't match them and beat them with our educational system, we're all in trouble.
All right. Well, and unfortunately, that is our time. And I want to thank the candidates for stopping by and being part of the program today. John Murtha, incumbent Republican, living in Baldwin, and Jim Swanson, Democratic challenger from Menominee. Thank you both very much for being part of it.
Well, thanks for having us here. Thank you for your callers from Good Questions.
Yep, thanks for having me, and it was great.
All right, and many thanks go out to Team West Side as well, including Mort Cypress for handling on-air production, Rebecca Rudolph for helping produce the show, Hannah Lagerman for promotions, and Molly O'Hearn, Grace Fair, and Dean Kallenbeck for keeping the ducks in a row. Our State Legislative Candidate Forum series continues next week with a live on-location broadcast in River Falls as we discuss issues facing the 30th State Assembly District with Republican incumbent Dean Knutson and Democratic challenger Diane O'Dean. We'll be broadcasting live from the Kinnikinnick Theater at UW-River Falls, and the public is welcome. Until then, I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next week. Thanks for listening.